The Augustin Hosinga Show with your host Augustin Hosinga.
Smack the shit out your bitch ass midget girlfriend, nigga.
Hello there and welcome back to the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga, and this is episode number 769. That is 769 of the Agostino Zynga Show with I, your host, Agostino Zynga, and I hope you are doing well wherever this lovely live stream may find you. I hope you are doing splendid. I really, really do hope you are doing as splendid as I am, because I'm feeling good, I'm feeling fine. Today I've got some really good news, actually. Another bit of good news. Absolutely overflowing with good news. It's weird how this stuff works out, isn't it? Sometimes you're down in the dumps. You feel like it's one negative thing after the next. And then all of a sudden you have back-to-back positive things. And you know what? My faith in life and humanity and people and just situations has been fully restored, because somebody gifted me a lovely and beautiful and very unexpected Shure SMB7B microphone. So I want to give a huge shout out to Keith. This just arrived at my doorstep. I've opened it. I've just tore it apart. I can't wait to get started and using it. I've got to run some tests on it and make sure it works with my audio interface, but it should do. It should be pretty fine in that regard. And if not, I have to get a little filter thing to make it work. But regardless, a Shure SMB7 is an industry standard microphone. It's the one that you see everybody using. It's the one that CoffeeZilla uses, the one that Rogan uses, So I'm legitimately on my way to becoming the Black Joe Rogan. I've got the Joe Rogan headphones. Big up Austin Casey for that. And now I've got the flipping Shure SMB7, which is essentially is a Joe Rogan microphone. So I'm going to be Joe Rogan'd out, and it's all thanks to you guys who tune into the show. So I really much appreciate, honestly, you know, like I said previously, if I was a little bit more emotional and if I was in touch with my emotions more than I should be, if I was in touch with my emotions like I should be, actually, then I would cry and I'd be really, you know, overwhelmed with emotion. But because I'm not, and I've gone through some tough times in my life, right? Get out the violin. I'm incapable of crying. But I do cry at weird things. So stuff like this, I don't cry, which I should. But I'll cry like, you know, let's say, for instance, I don't know, something bad happens to United. You know what I mean? Then suddenly I'm crying. Something that doesn't really make any sense. So whatever, doesn't matter. My eternal thanks and gratitude goes to Keith for this Shure SMB7. Like, you really don't know what this is going to do for my content going forward. It's really put me another level up. I'm really kind of, you know, conscious of this and being able to produce now really high level content, the best I can do with the maturity I've got available. There's no excuses now, and I'm just going to go at it full flipping pelt until the end of the year and see what I'll go on in it, because I've been having fun anyway. Right, before this stuff happened, I've just been having fun. I've just been enjoying myself, having a good time. Luckily, you guys seem to like what I do for some reason. I have people listening, watching, and checking out my stuff, which is always odd to me in that regard, because, like I said, I legitimately started this just on a whim. I started this just to muck around, just to have some fun, and now suddenly I have people checking me out. It's so weird. It's so bizarre. I swear to God, it's so odd. Like, I don't take it for granted. And I tell people this all the time. Like, I legitimately was doing this when I had like 2 viewers and I was happy. I was ranting into a microphone for like 2 hours plus with like 5 views. You can go back on my YouTube and check it out yourself. So it's not like I'm doing this for like a quick lick or to become famous or something. It's just because, you know, I'm legitimately bored most of the time. I don't actually have any real life friends, but I am interested in some things that I think other people might be interested in. So I'll just share it. That's it. You know what I mean? It's not even that deep. I swear to God, there's no like big master plan or anything. It's just, hey, let me just talk crap into a microphone about the stuff that I'm passionate about and see if other people connect. And so far they have, and it's great. So this stuff is awesome. It's obviously the cherry on the top of the cake, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Just you guys checking me out, sharing my stuff, leaving me reviews, emailing me, commenting me, DMing me. All this stuff is flipping amazing. And I really, really do, you know, I really am grateful for it. Like I said, I respect your background noise listening time because I'm very picky about what I listen to. So I know that if you have me playing in the background while you're wiping your ass, while you're sorting out your garage, doing the lawn, arguing with your girl, your guy, your mom, your dad, right? Or listen to me on your commute, or I'm distracting you from your actual work. That's precious time that you could be listening to anything in the world. The fact that you choose me is absolutely insane. Considering who I am, where I've come from, and what I've done in life, it's pretty flipping wild. You know what I mean? But I do really appreciate it. And yeah, man, it's always great to kind of get this sort of things because, you know, this stuff is great because it legitimately improves the content. And if it improves the content, you guys are going to have far better stuff to watch. And it's just going to be seamless seeing me. It's simple as that, really. So big up Keith for this. Really do appreciate it. Big up Keith. I really do appreciate it. We have to talk about this. I don't think I did talk about this, but I need to mention this because it's become a debate, which I don't really understand why. Fireboy DML has got himself into some hot water because he sat down for an interview and he essentially denounced Afrobeats. He says, hey, I don't make Afrobeats. And it's kind of stirred a whole conversation on my side of the internet where people couldn't seem to wrap their head around someone like Fireboy DML saying he doesn't make Afrobeats because I think most people, you know, would categorize his music as Afrobeats. So here Fireboy DML give his explanation as to why he doesn't make Afrobeats, and then I'll give you my side of it.
I wouldn't say I intentionally do it. It just comes off like that. When I'm making my songs, like I always say, I don't make Afrobeats. I just sort of like combine stuff. I like to make different kinds of music. So even when I'm making R&B or I'm doing pop, you can hear the Yoruba H factor in. You just know this question is, this is not an American press, you know, but so you can always tell that, you know, my roots and my identity is always in my music. I don't try to.
So I don't understand the controversy about this because I understand what they mean. Like, in general, being a quote-unquote low-level musician myself in terms of the DJing stuff, which isn't really an art form, isn't really a way of playing an instrument, but just run with me for a second here. Being a low-level artist myself, I know how limiting and restricting and confusing genres are. Usually when you're a DJ, people always ask you, what do you play? They always ask me that same thing. What do you play? Unfortunately, I have to give you a pretty normie answer. I have to be the kind of person that says, I'm into everything. You know, I have to be that kind of guy because I don't really play one genre. I could play a techno set. I could play a house set. I could play a disco set. I could play jungle. I could play breakbeats. But more often than not, I'm going to combine all of those genres into one set and maybe loads of stuff in between. So to ask me what I play is a little bit, it kind of puts me in a pigeonhole and it forces me to choose a genre. And I've noticed in DJing, actually, this has actually become a thing now. People actually have this debate in DJing where they're like, in order to really take your career to the next level, you actually do need to specify and be very specific and hone in and be very intentional about the genres that you play. So if it's Eurotrash, it's Eurotrash. If it's hard dance, it's hard dance. If it's hardcore, it's hardcore. If it's metal, it's metal. But you have to be intentional about it and almost have your image match it. So if it's like hard dance and Eurotrash, you're all dressed up like some Y2K kid or some kid that, you know, bloody ran around the vintage shop like the Tasmanian devil. And that suddenly now becomes part of your image. If you want to play techno, suddenly you're wearing all black and bondage and shit and painting your nails and going all that crazy. So it's all kind of match with genres, which again, is really crazy because it makes people dress up and act like they're in a costume. It's really bizarre. So I think it's even worse in African music because the most popular form of African music, especially in the modern day, in the last 10 plus years, has been Afrobeats, has been Afro House, has been Amapiano. That's what people kind of recognize when they listen to African music. But I would imagine, again, not having been part of the African music culture and what they're making over there, but I would imagine it's very limiting also because not everything that somebody makes who's from Africa is Afrobeats. just because you recognize it as Afrobeats doesn't mean he's making Afrobeats. It could be a completely new genre, a completely weird in-between genre, an after-genre, an evolution of it. So I understand when Fireboy DML says this. I don't think he's being pretentious. I don't think he's being stuck up. I don't think he's disowning his roots or whatever it may be. It's more so, hey, can we have a grown-up, civilized, progressive conversation that's nuanced and detailed and respects the diaspora, the diaspora of like, you know, or the patina of genres that exist over there in Africa in terms of genres. It just isn't Afrobeats, especially for the people listening to it. Like, if I make something and I deem it not to be Afrobeats, it's not Afrobeats. I decide what it is. You don't tell me what it is, especially as an artist. So I definitely understand where he's going with this, and I completely get it. And it's something that I remember, I remember saying it before. Doesn't matter who I remember saying it, but loads of artists have basically said the same sort of thing, and it's become a kind of a bit of a conversation. But, you know, I think it just shows the, you know, inability of people to really open their minds up to, like, the different genres of African music that could exist, or to try and categorize, or maybe the unwillingness of a lot of people to categorize some African music as pop. Because it doesn't sound like traditional pop to them. But it's like, no, there are pop elements in some of these guys. Maybe R&B, maybe even country, that could probably lend to it more so than the flipping, Afrobeats thing. Because you have a little bit of it going on in the UK too. In the UK, there's a whole slew of like underground artists who don't like being deemed to be called underground. One of them being Len and a few others, like maybe even Lancey Foe. Because it's a very limiting, and also it doesn't really describe what they're making. But it's hard to categorize it because it's not really similar to what the American kids are doing. It's not really like UK rap. You can't really call it UK hip hop either. So I guess when I'm describing those type of guys, I just describe them as like alternative, because for the most part, whenever you listen to like UK music on the radio, or, you know, on the main playlist here in the UK, at least, it's mostly like, you know, UK rap, road rap, road, whatever, drillish type of music. So whenever somebody does make something that maybe sounds a little bit, you know, esoteric, let's say, you're going to kind of lend it more onto the alternative side of things. But I think this conversation is great anyway, because what it does do, it does illustrate how popular and how widespread and how mainstream Afro beats or like African music has now become, to the point where artists are kind of debating and arguing about, hey, what genre do I play? Duh, 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 duh. I think that's a really, really good thing. It shows how far we've come, that the artists are not just happy riding the Afrobeats train. Like, no. This is a new level, new era, new whatever. Let's move on to other things. So I love it. And I don't have any problem with what Fireboy DML said there. I completely get him. Next, we got probably some of the best news I've ever heard in my entire life. Supreme are releasing a 30 years t-shirt book, 1994 to 2024. A free volume book set that basically depicts every single t-shirt Supreme has ever made. I can't flipping wait to buy this thing. I don't care how much money it is. I don't care how limited it is. I'm getting my hands on this, and this is going right on my fucking shelf. And I'm gonna fucking treasure it. I cannot wait. You guys know how much I flipping love Supreme. It was one of the first streetwear brands I've ever worn when I was first getting into streetwear. I think Supreme, the Hundreds and Stussy. No, Supreme the Hundreds. No, yeah, Supreme the Hundreds and Stussy and the New York thing, actually, were the first brands I ever wore when I got into flipping, you know, streetwear and stuff. So it holds a special place in my heart. I kind of probably even got into skateboarding via Supreme. I'm not going to lie. I think probably my first introduction to skateboarding, especially, you know, New York sort of like skateboard brands like Zoo York and stuff, was via Supreme. Found out about a lot of artists, musicians and stuff through Supreme, a lot of artists through Supreme. So it's really been my education in terms of all things culture. So anything that I could find about Supreme, especially from like old Japanese magazines I have, they have like old lookbooks, old line sheets and stuff, I'll check out. I've got flipping catalog. So I've got actual lookbook catalogs as well that Supreme used to do back in the day. They don't do them anymore, but they do these catalogs with, like, you know, the spring, summer, whatever year lookbooks of everyone wearing what they're wearing in them. And they're always something that I kind of always cherished over the years. So for Supreme to go this far and do this is fucking amazing, especially because they put out a book, I think, is it 2016? Supreme put out a book, I think, in 2016. I'm not too sure when it was. Let's see. It's a Supreme book that I actually have somewhere, or maybe I gave it to somebody. I had to pick it back up again. But yes, it's this one. So it's this book here. And I think it's the one that's got a foreword by James Jebb. It's got a foreword by Aaron Bondaroff. So they did put out this book originally that kind of chronicles the history of Supreme, loads of miscellaneous pictures and, you know, whatever else inside there. I actually have to get it off somebody. I think I might have it somewhere. It's actually available here, isn't it, on the UK. Maybe I'll just buy another copy. But there's an official Supreme book from back in the day that I'm always been a fan of. Let me see if I can get up on here. Supreme book. I think it's the one by Aaron Bondaroff. I'm pretty sure. It's got the foreword by Aaron Bondaroff on it. That's the one, yeah, this one. Supreme Downtown Skate Culture. So this came out in 2010, not 2016. So this is the first book they ever released that kind of documents, you know, so much of the history of Supreme. Let's actually read the blurb of this one. This is the blurb on this one says, over the last 16 years, the brand has stayed true to its roots while collaborating with some of the most groundbreaking artists. This definitive monograph, with written contribution from contrasting arbiters of style, Aaron Bondaroff, Glenn O'Brien, RIP to Glenn O'Brien, the legend Glenn O'Brien, RIP, including interviews between founder James Jebb and artist Kaws, together, this desperate element of the brand output, from legendary advertising campaigns to especially commissioned skateboard designs, photographs, artworks, and comprehensive index of their products to date, including collaborations with Jeff Koons, Richard Prince, Damien Hirst, Public Enemy, Lou Reed, Futura 2000, among any others. The Richie Illustrated book is a survey of 16 years of contemporary street fashion culture reflected in the pioneering work of the New York's most influential independent labels. And if I'm not mistaken, this was obviously 16th anniversary or something around those kind of lines, I'm assuming, or 20th. This actual book is going to be marking the 30th anniversary. So I'm assuming there's going to be some stuff coming out, which is going to be fucking sick. I can't wait. So 30th anniversary of Supreme is this year. So I'm assuming we're going to be in for some treats. But the first thing they're going to drop is this book, Supreme 30 Years. It says, this spring, Supreme will release a 30 years t-shirt, $9.94 to 2024. The three-volume monograph catalogues every single Supreme tee has released in their 30-year history. All three volumes will be sold together in a slip case. Amazing. So you can't buy it separately, all together. Tees have played a critical role in Supreme history. Since its inception, the original Supreme shop opened on Lafayette Street. I actually visited that shop, actually. That's when I first went to New York. That was like going on a pilgrimage. I'm not going to lie. Being able to go to that original Lafayette Supreme store with all the TVs in the window was legitimately like going into a pilgrimage. Walking inside and hearing the fucking noise, right? Of how loud the music is. Because that's always an infamous thing. They'd be playing the music super fucking loud. You literally could hear it from the streets. It was fucking crazy how loud that shit was. But that was the original store that I went into. This one here. With the old TV screens in the window. It's a fucking legendary spot, legitimately one of the best ever. And yeah, man, I fucking loved it. It really was one of those things I remember kind of going to, and it kind of holds a special place in my heart. I'm not going to lie, it really did. And I can't wait to get hold of that flipping book. There you've got some pictures of the original Supreme, so original Supreme members back in the day. Nothing has really changed, really, in that respect, in terms of what, you know, the people that go in there, what they look like and stuff. You know, it's just a home for all the delinquents and skate kids. Actually, back then, the funny thing about back then, Supreme was more of a, like, home for, like, all the weirdos, too, especially with Aaron Bondaroff connection. They had a lot of the art crew, a lot of the LES downtown art crew, the contemporary art guys, the Dashno, all those guys were connected with it. Now I think it's gone back to its kind of skater roots, and obviously with the streetwear, sneakerhead, hypebeast fan base. But back then I felt like it was way more mixed. You'd see designers there, photographers, artists and shit. So it was a fucking cool time to go there. So yeah, I don't take that for granted. It continues. Supreme has celebrated the opening of the new shops, commemorated iconoclast from Lou Reed to Kermit the Frog, and developed its irreverent voice all with tees. Available on April 25th. I can't fucking wait. This is what the three-volume book thing looks like. You've got a big white slip case with Supreme box logo on the outside, and each free volume has a Supreme box logo on the spine. So when you put it in together, it forms the box logo print there. Nice and easy. And then, of course, you've got all of the t-shirts. I love how the first t-shirt starts off with the original box logo. And I'm assuming you have every single design, probably even the ones that were cancelled, maybe. Hopefully, you have some of the cancelled ones, too, because some of the cancelled ones are fucking hard. The ones that never made it into production because they couldn't, you know, get certain things copyrighted or licensed. But So many good teas here. Can't wait to check it out. Really, really am eager to get my hands on this fucking literal piece of history. Legitimate piece of history. Absolutely love it. Love everything about it. Supreme box box set coming soon. If I'm not mistaken, it's like $168, if I'm sure about it. So that's how much it is. $168 for the entire volume. So I'm definitely going to get a hold of that. Can't wait until it drops. This is going to be mine. This is going to be mine. Next, we have to mention this because I don't think I talked about it when it first dropped, but we have to react and I have to give my opinion on the flipping amazing Drizzy Drake record, Taylor Made. The freestyle he dropped where he essentially used AI voices of Tupac and Snoop Dogg to go at Kendrick and his lack of response ever since he dropped his push-up record. And I have to be honest, like Drake might be 2-1 up. Drake might be 2-1 up because this song... this tune, this freestyle absolutely slaps. The fact that he went and writ verses in the same flowing cadence of a Tupac and a Snoop Dogg, but then used their AI voices to kind of sound like them, is fucking incredible. Especially when you consider all of the rumors around the first drop. When he first put out push-ups, when it first leaked, sorry, people were thinking it was AI, myself included. So he basically then took that whole thing and applied it, you know, to his own diss record. So kind of like playing on the whole AI thing. And I think this TaylorMade record is absolutely insane. So I'm going to play this right now. This is Drake, TaylorMade Freestyle. It's not available on any DSPs at the moment now, but Drake did put it up on his Instagram. He put it up on his Twitter. He made it very, you know, clear that it was him that put it out. And it's fucking hard. The beat slaps too. It's fucking amazing. And I really, really want to hear Kendrick speak now, because it feels like this record is definitely teasing him. He's kind of trying to provoke, trying to poke at him to hope, you know, pause, no diddy, to hope that Kendrick replies. And I really want him to reply, because I think when Kendrick replies, it's going to get very disrespectful. I think Drake has been disrespectful in some bits, but he's not gone full all the way because he wants to give Kendrick a chance. No, not give him a chance, but, you know, he wants to set him up, basically. But I think when Kendrick does reply, it's going to be extra disrespectful. So I appreciate what we're seeing now. I appreciate what we're seeing now from Drake, because it's going to get real ugly real soon.
Does rise again. You can see it in my eyes again. Kendrick, we need ya, the West Coast savior. Ain't gravy your name in some hip hop history. If you deal with this viciously, you seem a little nervous about all the publicity. Fuck this Canadian light-skinned dot. We need to know the baby West Coast victory, man. Call him a bitch for me. Talk about him liking young girls, that's a gift for me. Heard it on the Budden podcast, it's gotta be true. They told me the spirit of Machiavelli is alive. And the nigga under 5'5", so it's gotta be you. I would beat the whole fucking game. It was me and Snoop Dogg. Had my fucking shirt off in the House of Blues. K, you gotta fuck this nigga, girl. He gotta get abused. All that shit about burning tattoos, he's not amused. That's jail talk for real thugs. You gotta be you. Gotta leave this motherfucker broken and bruised before we really lose. You asked for the smoke, now I seen you too busy for the smoke. I won't lie, the people confused. Now you about to get this shit another week and fall back to homegirl for running numbers up. I would've refused. For these industry relationships, she not in your shoes. You supposed to be the boogeyman, go do what you do. Unless this is a moment that you tell us it's not really you. In that case, there's nothing left to say, I just pass it to Snoop.
Yes, you. What the fuck you really got to do? We passed you the torch at the House of Blues, and now you gotta do some dirty work. You know how to move, right? Right? I know you never been to jail, orange jumpsuits and shower shoes. Never shot nobody, never stabbed nobody, never did nothing violent. And no one, it's the homies that empower you. But still, you gotta show this fucking eye of who's boss on the west. Now's the time to really make a power move. Cause right now, it's looking like you writing out the game plan on how to lose. How to bark up the wrong tree and then get your head popped in a crowded room. World is watching this chess game, but are you out of moves? Doubt you know the DOG never fucking doubted you. But right now, it seems like you posted up without a clue of what the fuck you about to do.
Yeah, that's the truth. I'm definitely about to come around the land gang and let my fucking bow move. Shitting on you niggas from a whole different altitude. High up in the sky like I'm Howard Hughes. The first one really only took me an hour or two. The next one is really about to bring out the coward in you. But now we gotta wait a fucking week, cause Taylor Swift is your new top. And if you about to drop, she gotta approve. This girl really about to make you act like you not in a feud. She tailor made your schedule with Ant, you out of the loop. Hate all you corporate industry puppets, I'm not in the mood. I love it when you niggas talk loose like I'm not in the room. Since like that, your tone changed a little, you not as enthused. How are you not in the booth? It feel like you kinda removed. You tryna let this shit die down, nah. Not this time, nigga, you following through. I guess you need another week to figure out how to improve. What the fuck is taking so long? We waiting on you. The rest of y'all are definitely involved, y'all getting it too. Soon as you get the courage to drop, I'm out on the loose. On the loose. Yeah, shout out to Taylor Swift. Biggest gangster in the music game right now. You know, I moved my album when she dropped. I said that already. You know, she about to mini run, do a milli rock on your head top. She got the whole PG Lang on mute like that Beyonce challenge. Y'all boys quiet for the weekend, like. Dot, I know you in that NY apartment, you struggling right now. I know it. In a notepad doing lyrical gymnastics, my boy. You better have a motherfucking quintuple entendre on that shit. Some shit I don't even understand, like. Shit better be crazy. We waiting on you. Yo.
So I fucking love it. Absolutely love it. Killer record. Back to back. Four diss songs, not verses from Drake. So it's on Kendrick now to come out with something hard. He's obviously 2-1 up. Drake, obviously, I feel like. But let's see Wagwan now. Let's see Wagwan now coming forward. I'm also just happy. As much as I dislike beef, I think it takes away from, you know, great music that the fans won't ever get now because, you know, Kendrick and Drake are beefing. Most likely there's something real underneath all of this beef and we're probably never going to see them collaborate anytime soon. Same thing goes with Future. Same thing goes with Metro Boomin. So we're going to lose out on a lot, right? We're going to lose out on never hearing a Metro Boomin produced Drake album. We're going to lose out on not having another Watch the Thrones 2, whatever it may be. But the one thing it has done, which I'm happy about, is that it has allowed or encouraged people to talk about music again. Because that's one of the reasons why I dislike academics. As much as I love his streams, I dislike this thing that he did where he made first week sales to be like the number one talking point when it comes to hip hop and when it comes to music. It's the main thing that everyone talks about. How many sales did you get first week? Did your tour sell out? All this sort of nonsense stuff. It's never ever about the quality of the music, which is the really annoying thing because the music I think is the everlasting thing. The experiences, the first week numbers, all those things are fleeting and they're in the moment. But the music lasts forever. And sometimes stuff resonates with you that maybe isn't commercially successful. And no one ever talks about that in mainstream or in the general kind of blogosphere of hip hop stuff because everyone's obsessed with first week sales. So at least with this beef, we're seeing people dissect lyrics. We're seeing people read lyrics on Genius, dissect beats, rate disses. Like, it's actually, even though it's all based on beef, at least we're talking about music, you know? And it's also pushing the artist because one thing I've always been critical about Drake, as much as I love Drake, it has felt a little bit like he's going through the motions. He hasn't really been testing himself. And it's not a surprise because he's number one. He's obviously the best and he obviously commands the charts and he's on everyone's flipping Spotify Wrapped list at the end of the year. Even though everyone says don't listen to him, whenever everyone's Spotify comes out, the actual truth is there and people listen to Drake way more than they want to admit or they care to admit. But artistically, he's not really pushing his pen. And I feel like what we saw with him, especially when he released that For the Dogs extra, look, when he put out the deluxe for that and it was just 6 tracks when everyone was complaining that his main album wasn't that good, I thought that 6-track little EP he put out might have been better than the entire album. I swear on my life. And that was why. Because he was kind of embarrassed. He was kind of ridiculed and shamed because everyone was saying that For the Dogs wasn't that great. So he went back in a booth, quickly whipped up some songs, obviously with a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And he came out and proved to people that he still has it. So at least with this beef, it's pushing people like Drake, who are normally going through the motions, to actually come out and do something, you know, a bit hard. So I'm loving that. I just hope it doesn't obviously get to anything serious. If it does, I guess we have to pick up the pieces as a fan base, but at least we're getting some good music discussion. Salute. Next on the list, we have this pretty insane headline and article courtesy of CNBC that just explains why Nike are where they are, lacking innovation, losing a little bit of their grip on the youth, and just generally a little bit all over the place, right? Because this article, courtesy of CNBC, legitimately took me aback. The CEO of CNBC, sorry, the CEO of Nike, blamed remote work for innovation slowdown, saying it's hard to build disruptive products on Zoom. This is insane, right? So let's read the article here. Nike CEO John Donahoe, he is a fucking hoe if he's saying what he's saying there, on Friday blamed remote work for the company falling behind on innovation, saying that it's tough to be disruptive when people are working from home. In an interview with CNBC's Sarah Eisen from Paris, Donahoe was asked about the company's lack of fresh products in this assortment, which had been a concern amongst investors. What's been missing is the kind of bold, disruptive innovation that Nike's known for. When we look back, the reasons are fairly straightforward. He pointed to the footwear factories in Vietnam were forced to shutter during COVID-19, but said even more importantly... Yo, big up Adizy.
Big up's another show.
Yo, big up, appreciate you, Adizy. Thank you for the super chat, my friend. I appreciate you. So he said... What's been missing is a bold, disruptive innovation that Nike's known for. When we look back, the reasons are fairly straightforward. He pointed out that footwear factories in Vietnam were forced to shutter during COVID-19 pandemic, but said that even more importantly, Nike's employees work from home for 2.5 years. So he's blaming COVID for the reason why Nike have kind of fallen by the wayside. Absolutely shameful, shameless, actually. In hindsight, it turns out it's really hard to do bold, disruptive innovation, to develop a boldly disruptive shoe on Zoom. Our teams came back together 18 months ago in person. We recognize this. So we have, realigned our company, and over the last year, we've been ruthlessly focused on rebuilding our disruptive innovation pipeline along with our iterative innovation pipeline. Let's continue here. Donahoe said Nike's innovation pipeline is as strong as ever, and consumers can expect to start seeing new products drop each season, as well as fresh storytelling as the brand is actually known for. Okay, cool. I guess we'll have to wait and see on that one. The chief executive comments come at a tough time for the company. Some analysts and investors have criticized the sneaker giant for falling behind on the innovation and losing the market share to upstarts like On Running, Hoka, which have won over a new generation of runners and have grown rapidly in recent years. I definitely agree with that one. If you've been running, you've been outside, you would have known that Hoka and On Running are doing absolute bits out there in the streets. People are really liking what they're doing. In December, Nike announced a broad restructuring plan to reduce costs by about $2 billion over the next 3 years. It also cut its sales guidances, and as it warned of a softer demand in the quarter ahead. 2 months later, it has said it was shedding 2% of its workforce for more than 1,500 jobs. So it invested in growth areas such as running, the women's category, and Jordan brand. Imagine losing your job because Nike want to save their running department. Something they've kind of alienated and taken for granted for the longest time. Your job is now a sacrificial lamb to keep running on running. Can you imagine that? Donahoe insisted on Friday that Nike is still gaining share and remains a dominant force in running and all things sport. We've done more to advance running than any brand in the world over the last 50 years, and we continue to lead in this elite runners. Innovation has always been what has been marked Nike in running and other categories, so we're going to copy what other people do. We're going to bring innovation. We're not going to copy people, we're going to bring innovation. Sorry. Cool. All right. What do I think? I think this is a lot of hobbledygook, a lot of bullshit, and just a CEO's attempt to cope and to sort of like divert blame away from obviously his lack of foresight and obviously to not take any accountability to what's going on. From my personal experience, being a somewhat of a sneakerhead and being in this kind of scene for a very, very long time, it's been something that we've been saying for ages, even before COVID, that Nike was lacking innovation. And it's not because they don't have talented designers working at, you know, at their flipping headquarters. They do. They have amazing talented people all over the world designing amazing things. But Nike was always looking at the easiest thing to do. The easiest thing to do is to pump out retros, Jordans, Air Force Ones, Air Maxes, just continually pumping out shoes that were designed 20, 30 plus years ago because, you know, the consumer knows them. They're tried and true. They have the data to back it up. Just keep pumping up in different colorways. Now, what Nike also fucked up on, which in my opinion, I think this, when they started to specifically, make shoes for sneakerheads. So they recognized that sneaker culture was becoming a thing. They started to lean into it more and create limited edition colorways, tier zero colorways, or specific shoes. Over time, they flooded the market. There's too much of that stuff, and it's not interesting because most of the limited edition shoes, they usually are applied to retros. So if you're only selling limited edition sneakers to sneakerheads, but the silhouettes you're using are 30, 20 plus year old models, you're not really bringing any innovation, and you're kind of tapping out, and you're kind of running that well dry of sneakerheads who want to buy Jordan 1s, because there's only so many Jordan 1 retros you can buy in your lifetime until you get tired of that silhouette. Hence why they're starting to kind of like put a bit of love into the 2s, into the 3s, 4s, 5s, and 8s and upwards, as you've seen over the last few years. But it's still not enough. What we want to see is innovation. And what the other brands have done, New Balance, you know, Hoka, One One, Puma even, Mizuno, Asics, they've taken some of their classics, they've updated them, they've given them a new breath of life, but they've also introduced new innovation at the same time. So for every two or three retros they put out, there's always a new silhouette. But Nike doesn't do that. They're kind of shy about doing it. They're hesitant to do it because it's harder to do. It's harder of a story to tell. It requires more money. It requires more time. It requires more effort than just to put out another Air Max, you know, slap loads of fucking brand logos over the fucking Air Max Day nonsense and just keep going over and over and over again and spinning that wheel. So this is not a surprise. And this, for, you know, for this guy, John Donahoe, to like blame it on COVID and blame it on remote work is kind of disgusting. I'm not going to lie, especially when you think about a designer that's, you know, out there in Oregon and working at Nike and designing colorways and silhouettes and, you know, doing stuff in the innovation kitchen or whatever it may be. You don't need to be in the office to do that job. If you've seen anybody who designs shoes or designs anything for that matter, there's no need. Like, working in an office doesn't affect the way that you design, doesn't change your output. The reason why your stuff doesn't get put out is because of the head brass, the top dogs, the sales guys are the ones that sometimes stifle these shoes from actually being released to the public. It's not that these guys aren't designing great shoes. These guys and girls aren't designing great shoes. They are. I'm sure they're designing amazing shoes in there. You'll probably go to a Nike head office and find all these amazing concepts and ideas and stuff that they've been working on that never saw the light of day because some salesperson, some buyer, some head person over at Nike, probably this John Donahoe guy, said, no, let's put out more Nike Air Max 1s. That's the reason why there's an issue. Look at even the Air Max 1. The Air Max 1 has been a staple Nike shoe for a long time. It obviously does great sales numbers. Instead of taking that and trying to put a new model out, they just took a Nike Air Max 1 and gave us the big window. Yes, I'm happy as a fan of that Nike Air Max because it's a classic shoe. And the Nike Air Max big window has a better shape, has obviously the big window. But that money and that resources could have been probably best spent to actually make something brand new. And when you have Yeezy, when he was at Adidas, you know, consistently bringing out new silhouettes and completely redefining and changing, you know, what a sock shoe looked like, what a particular running shoe looked like, and kind of changing people's expectation on what those shoes at that sort of level are going to appear, feel, and sort of like drop like, it puts a lot more pressure on Nike, and Nike are feeling it for once. And now, instead of being like the leader in their space, instead of kind of innovating and setting the tone, they're now being reactive to the industry. That's where they don't want to be. They don't want to be reactive because now the other brands are starting to gain a little bit more leverage and take over. And I think nowadays also, I think there's way more, I wouldn't say flexibility, but I think people are way more open to try different brands. More so than I've ever seen in my lifetime. Because I remember a long time ago, you know, people would be ashamed even to wear Adidas is, which is weird to think about it. But people would be so Nike fanboyed out that an Adidas would be like a horrible second prize. Nowadays, you see people wearing Puma, Adidas, Reebok, Diadora, Mizuno, Asics, you know, the new companies are on running, like Hoka, like all these, like people are really deciding that whatever silhouette, whatever shape they like, that fits them well, that suits what they wear, that's comfortable, they're just going to rock with it. They don't really care. There is no like Nike dominance and grip. Yes, in some aspects, maybe in athletics, maybe in sports, maybe in running, maybe people still like the, you know, the Nike thing, because Nike has really kind of latched itself onto a lot of like elite athletes, especially in running, when it comes to marathon runners and whatever, and other long distance runners. So when people buy those shoes, in their mind, they're kind of hoping to kind of, you know, feel like one of those Kenyans who break records and shit. So they have that kind of catchment. But everybody else isn't that miffed. Isn't that myth with Nike? Nike hasn't gassed people that way. So a lot of the innovation that they are doing in there is being stifled by the executives. There's, you know, they need to give them the reins to put the shoes out. It's not the lack of people not working remotely that's affecting them. It's that Nike hasn't taken risk in a very long time. And now they're having to because the business is faltering. So this John Donahoe guy is talking out of his ass. And I hope that this precedent or this kind of speech he said isn't also going to be a kind of a death knell or like a warning signal, because he's trying to push everyone to work back in the office. Like, working in an office doesn't improve output the way that some CEOs think it does, not across the board. I think some industries, obviously, it's important, but I think in most cases, giving people flexibility to work from home certain days of the week, it actually makes them work better. I know it did for me. And I'm somebody who sometimes gets distracted easily. I sometimes need a little bit of micromanaging or whatever it may be. But I noticed in the last few years when I've been working at home, I've become way more respectful and I've become way more grown up with my work. When I'm working, I'm working. I'm not on my phone. I'm not checking random things. I'm just doing my job, because I'm also conscious that I've been given this privilege. I've been given this gift of like working from home for certain days. So I'm not going to fuck it up by then just mucking around and not doing the job I'm meant to doing. And like a grown up, people pay me for my time. So when you pay me for my time, I'm going to give you back as much as possible that I can give during that time. So I think a lot of people are like me in that respect. They don't want to lose their privileges. They don't want to lose this opportunity to work from home. So why would you fuck it up? So this whole idea that working from home people are lazy, I think is a bit of a broad generalization. I'm sure they do exist. Lazy people who just kind of put a flipping doll's face on the webcam and don't do anything. But the majority of us enjoy the ability of like taking our kids to school in the morning and then be able to come back and start work and picking them up at night, or being able to like myself to go to the gym in the morning and come back and not rush, because that's something I used to always hate when I was working in an office. One of the worst things about working in the office was just the gym routine. So I'd have to go in the morning, but then I'd have to take my kind of change of clothes with me, then shower at work, or maybe quickly shower at gym. It's just annoying. You do have to carry like a little mini luggage bag with you. Or what I'd usually do sometimes to kind of counteract that is that I think 3 times a week I'd run home just to kind of get some mileage in and get some running, get some cardio and some workout in. I'll just take my running gear with me and I'd run home from my work, which wasn't too bad because, you know, it was like in, you know, east central of like London, which is not that shabby from like where I kind of live. But still, you know, you're running like 5 to 6 miles 3 times per week just because you don't want to, you know, take loads of, you know, soggy washing clothes to the flipping work all the time. But then you're also having to run back home with a bag. So the ability to work from home really for me allows me to even do this pod. To do this pod and stuff and to do my streams, it's because I work from home mainly. I don't have to go in the office. If I had to go in the office, I couldn't stream when I stream because, you know, I'd be having to sleep and wake up early and having to prepare to go on my commute. And all those things will impact the way you do your work. So I'm not going to put you in a good environment, not going to make you put in a good flipping place, blah, 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 blah. So John Donahue is talking out of his ass, and I hope this doesn't mess up everybody's working from home thing over there at Nike. I really flipping do hope it doesn't mess it up. Moving on, we also have this really sad story to kind of update on. This is courtesy of the legendary Kim Ann Fox. I'm sure some of you know Kim Ann Fox from the legendary song Creature that released back in the day. She's a prominent producer, DJ, and just all around badass. And unfortunately, Kim Ann Fox and their partner, Cora, unfortunately were assaulted in Berlin. I'm assuming it's some sort of like, you know, attack on them because of their, because of their orientation and shit. But this caption is pretty distressing, especially when you see in the picture. And even more so because it happened in Berlin. That's a really strange thing because, you know, we think of Berlin as like a bastion of, you know, inclusivity and acceptance and a safe space for everybody that operates under the LGBTQ plus umbrella. But unfortunately, the reality of it is much more different than what we're actually seeing. So let's see the caption. Today, Cora and my first anniversary as a couple. Today's Cora and my first anniversary as a couple, sorry. It breaks our heart that a disturbing and violent incident is overshadowing a milestone about the heart that we will never... Sorry, huh? It breaks our hearts that a disturbing and violent incident is overshadowing a milestone about the heart that we feel necessary to share with you. Yesterday, April 5th, Cora and I were attacked while holding hands and talking, or taking a walk, sorry, in our neighborhood of Berlin. We were in Panierstraße, near whatever that word is, a well-known area connecting Kreuzberg and Neukölln. We blissfully in our own world, debating where to go for our anniversary dinner, when a young woman walking past us reached out and grabbed Cora's crotch, completely unprovoked. So what, grabbed her by the pussy? Jesus Christos. When Cora turned around to confront the woman, asking why she touched her, without pause, the woman immediately lunged at Cora, throwing punches to her face. It happened so fast, and before I could even process what was happening, the force of punches knocked... Bruh, come on, Kim and Fox, come on, my dear. Your girl's getting punched and you're processing thoughts. Like, you should have went in... You should have went Gohan, Goku mode on this lady. Jesus. When Cora turned around to confront the woman, asking why she touched her, without pause, the woman immediately lunged at Cora, throwing punches to her face. It happened so fast, and before I could even process what was happening, the force of the punches knocked her to the ground, and blood was dripping from her cheek. To be fair, though, as well, like, imagine you're in, like, the zone of going out with your partner, you know, for an anniversary dinner. You're literally holding hands, you're flipping interlocked fingers, you're staring each other in the eyes, you're kissing, you're hugging. You're just remembering all these moments without even saying words, right? You're kind of, you know, mentally passing through all these flipping crazy scenarios and memories that you have of each other in this really blissful moment. And then, boom, something violent happens. Maybe you would react. You wouldn't react so quickly because you're so, like, shook. Like, oh, my God, what's happening? So maybe that was a case of why Kim and Fox didn't just lunge in and also just start hitting that woman with, you know, with every limb that she has connected to her body. Because I definitely would have done that. Because you can't, you know what I mean? Like, I've always said, I think every person should have a list of things that they will not accept. Or no, they should have a list of things that they're willing to go to prison for. Or jail, let's say prison, jail. You should have a list of things that you're willing to go, you know, get handcuffed for. You're willing to get put in the back of a meat wagon, a police car, get taken to the police office and processed for. You should have a list. That list should include people fucking about with your, you know, with somebody you care for, love interest, partner, even a date. Like, you should have things on your list. And I've got a very short list of things, but they are things that are non-negotiable. Doesn't matter who the person is, how big they are, whatever scenario, you're willing to kind of go RIP. You're willing to go GoFundMe. You're willing to go airbrush t-shirts. You're willing to go, you know, people holding doves and letting them go in the air at a funeral. You're willing to go nuclear. And one of them should be, you know, out with your missus on the anniversary dinner and some hoonigan, some behemoth, some beast, some animal decides to attack her or grab her by the pussy. Like, you should go nuclear. There should be no fucking question. But anyway, what do I know? It continues. Now on the ground, they proceeded to kick me in the back and legs. Sorry, let's continue. I skipped by. It happened so fast, and before I could even process what was happening, the force of the punches knocked her to the ground, and blood was dripping from her cheek. The younger woman was walking with a younger man, who joined in the confrontation as soon as I attempted to defend Cora. I was beaten to the ground by both of them. Jesus Christ, and they got jumped by two people. A boy and a girl. God damn it. I was beaten to the ground by both of them. Now on the ground, they proceeded to kick me in the legs and the back. The incident went on like this. Cora and I did what we could to defend ourselves, each other, while simultaneously yelling out, but to bystanders to help. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but that yelling out to bystanders to help is fucking hilarious. Oh, God. At one point, I ran into traffic crying, pleading for someone to help, when it's clear no one around to help. That's the thing about Berlin, man. Like, it's a bit of a hellhole, isn't it? As much as I love the place for raving, like... It's a bit of a hellhole. People leave you alone because, you know, it's a hellhole. But when you actually need help, you realize how much of a hellhole it is. Like, no one's going to help you there. Everyone's kind of just got their head down, turning the other way, you know, fucked up on whatever they're on, coming down from whatever they're on the way to work, don't really give a fuck. So, yeah, not surprised, to be fair, that they got no help. When it was clear no one around would do anything to help, I got my phone out and started to record. Doing this pissed off the assailant, and instead of walking away, they punched me again, shoved me to the ground, and repeatedly kicked me again. Jesus Christ. They got absolutely battered by these two. Like, and they just, again, these look like, I don't know, regular people that you'd see in Berlin in that area, probably Turkish, maybe something else of, you know, the, of denomination, but they should have went nuclear on two of them. Like, honestly, you should have catched or caught a case. Should have caught a case on both of them, legitimately. This time is hard to calculate in situations like this. I may not be able to remember how long it lasted, but I can tell you a day later, Cora and I are still discovering new bruises from the three different times we were pinned to the ground and beaten. I can also recall... I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh, but oh my God, bro. I think it's necessary to have some level of self-defense if you're like a nightlife person. If you're a nightlife person and you're like, you dress differently, you look different, you might be in a relationship that a lot of people might not deem to be acceptable in their weird, you know, bigoted, you know, way, you should have some defense mechanisms about it. You should be able to like do something, because you know someone's going to try and test you. It's like a gay guy growing up in the hood. Gay guys that grow up in the hood can always fight. Why? Because people always try them. Because people assume just because somebody likes guys that they can't fight or something. So they usually have a bit of scrap about them. I think you have to do the same thing if you're a girl or whatever. You have to have something about you, whether it's pepper spray, whether it's a fucking, you know, a taser, whether it's a fucking Swiss Army knife. Like, you have to be ready to go all that way, because you can't be having somebody nearly killing you in the street because they didn't like that you kissed your girlfriend. Like, that should be a no negotiation thing. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Do you know what I mean? Like, this is my person. Don't you ever try, you know what I mean? Like, nah, you can't. You can't do that, man. You can't. You can't. I can also recall how clearly I could see the blood on my girlfriend's face because of it, all of it happened in broad daylight. Yeah. So, again, it's just troubling, isn't it? Because, you know, bastion of safe space, allegedly, inclusive, allegedly, diverse, allegedly, but these things happen a lot more often than you'd probably like to believe, or like people would like to believe, like you to believe. Either way, strength and solidarity and healing to Kim Ann Fox and Cora. Hope they both are doing much better and heal themselves. And hopefully this is also a lesson, because they both, you know, got away from this with their lives intact, that they need to maybe, I won't say move correctly, but, you know, be able to have things to defend themselves with. Because I guess in this case, they're clearly showing in the caption that maybe they can't fight or anything, which is fine. Not everyone can fight, but you should have something to defend yourself with. Fuck it. If you get pulled over, if you have to go to prison for it because a police officer catches you with it, it is what it is. But at least you got something to defend yourself with, because this is unacceptable. You can't have somebody legitimately nearly trying to kill you or fuck you up in a big way. You know what I mean? It's not, and not have anyone to help and not be able to defend yourself also. That must be such a helpless feeling. Your partner's getting fucked, and then you try and jump in and you both get fucked. And it's just like, you know, you're both then all getting beaten and bruised and battered on the floor while no one comes to help. That's not cool. So yeah, strength and solidarity to Kim Ann Foxman and Cora. Strength and solidarity and healing to Kim Ann Fox and Cora. I hope they both get well. I really do hope they both get well very, very, very soon. Moving on from that, we need to talk about this. This is really a fun little caption to kind of just comment on, but I just wanted to kind of, you know, opine on it a little bit more. This is courtesy of this DJ called Wes Bagley, who played recently at Unfold a few weeks ago. And they wrote a really nice caption about how great Unfold was. But it also made me feel really annoyed, because we don't have other clubs like Unfold in London. It's just this one place that's great. I love it. It's amazing. You guys know how much I love Unfold. You know how much I love Fold actually as a club. And I've been championing it ever since it fucking opened and shit. But I just want London to have more spaces. And it's really annoying that fucking, you know, dullards and idiots and layabouts and absolute, you know, fucking wage thieves like Amy Lamy are doing nothing to kind of like preserve the spaces we already have, you know, champion new ones. And it just seems like we're running out of spaces. Like, there's just not a lot of options. Like, every time I want to go out on the weekend and I check RA events, it's the same places, the same three or four clubs you can go to. Venue, MOT, Fold, and maybe Colour Factory, you know, maybe The Yard, now maybe Set in flipping Greenwich. But there's not many. there's not really many, especially after 4 p.m. So after 4 a.m. there's not many clubs, and it's just annoying. We've only got one place, and I wouldn't say I'm kind of tapped out of Fold, but I don't know. I'm a club goer. Do you know what I mean? I want to go to different spaces. I don't want to go to just the same place every single weekend, but I'm being forced to, because they're the only people that do great programming. It's the only half decent club with great clientele and community and people that go there. And it's just what it is, but we need to have more options. Anyway, the caption reads as follows. I think I'm allowed to say I played at Unfold yesterday. Lineups are unannounced. I'm 47. I think that was my favorite time I've ever played music in a club. Wasn't my first time playing there, but it just gets better and better. Great crowd. The sound is amazing. Lighting is spot on. Door staff security are nice, and the people behind it are doing it for exactly the right reasons, rare and special, which is obviously a great compliment, right? And I think it definitely echoes a lot of the sentiments and thoughts that I have with Fold. I've never actually been to an Unfold in all the years that it's open, because, you know, it's a rave on a Sunday, and usually on a Sunday I'm nursing a hangover or I just can't bother to leave my house. But I've always heard great things about Unfold, and it's a completely different, from what I've heard, community and even clientele that people that go to the regular parties on the Fridays and Saturdays, because they do the Unfold on Sunday afternoon from like 12 all the way until like 11 p.m. at night. Cool. Great. Amazing. But this shouldn't be an exception. This shouldn't be a rarity. This should be normal. Every club in London should be like this, of this kind of level, and it's not. And the reason why it's not is because of, you know, gross negligence, oversight, gentrification, and just real ineptitude all the way around. And it's frustrating, because I think, similar to Berlin, we have a great catchment area of DJs. We have some of the probably highest density population of DJs per square mile. You fucking throw a fucking pair of CD, or no, you throw a pair of fucking, you know, Sennheiser HD25s in the air, and you're definitely going to land on maybe two or three DJs, if not more. But for some reason, we don't have the club necessary to facilitate them. So there's not enough gigs to go around for the DJs. There's not enough variety of them going around, because not enough clubs to book them in. And the clubs that are open would prefer to book like bigger names, because if you've got a club, the last thing you want to do is obviously, you know, have it not go out of business. So you book bigger names. You don't have the possibility of cultivating a community or bringing up new acts or having resident DJs or whatever it may be. And it just becomes the same old faces, because those same old faces are the ones that sell tickets. And it's just around and around we go. I want variety. I've always said, especially after the first time I went to Fold, there needs to be a Fold in North, in South, and in West. There should be one in each fucking part of London that's open until 6 a.m. And if anything, if that happened, guess what would be the case? You would actually have less bottleneck, less pressure put on Fold, because then not everybody's going to one place that's open until 6. It's kind of spread out, and maybe it's spread out in areas where other people live. But because that's the only place that you got, you know, people get turned away, get annoyed. It maybe gets too full, and it's not enjoyable. Whatever happens, and obviously that, and especially when people end up leaving at the end, it kind of fucks up the neighbors and people around, because there's loads of noise and litter, blah 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 blah. So with the variety and the fucking options, will definitely help us in general, but we don't seem to be getting them. But in general, great flipping shout out, I guess, from Wes Bagley regarding Unfold. Another good endorsement for what they're doing there. I think they have an Unfold coming up, actually, really, really soon. I'm sure I saw an Unfold that's meant to be coming maybe this Sunday, actually, if I'm not mistaken. So if you're listening to the pod and you actually want to go to Fold, I would recommend to check it out then. It's actually a good time to actually see, you know, it's like if I was to recommend going Berghain, I'd say go to Berghain when it's not a special event, like go during a random month, go during a random weekend in May. And you'd obviously have a far better time there, because you have a greater representation of what the club's about than going to like a big New Year's Day, Easter kind of event. And I think the same thing goes for Fold. If you actually want to have a greater representation or example of what the club's about, maybe avoid some of the big bait nights and maybe go to, you know, maybe a smaller promoter, maybe like Night Service, I'm a big fan of. They do really great things. Or maybe just go to fucking Unfold, that's usually on the Sunday. And I think they've got an Unfold happening. Yeah, they've got an Unfold on the 28th, actually, which is this weekend, I think, actually happening. So if anything, that's also a good option to kind of check out, because the Sunday raves allows the club to open for way longer, and then lineups are unannounced. They're usually, you know, great people, usually you might get a special guest there as well, because a lot of like high, you know, well-known DJs, sorry, are in London during that weekend. Sometimes they can't play other places because they have, you know, stipulations in their contract, they're vent to play other places. But then if you can play at a line at a club that doesn't announce your lineup, and then kind of get around that regard, so you can sometimes find some really cool special guests there also. So I recommend, if you haven't been before, check out Unfold and check out Fold in general. Definitely one of our better clubs in London, but I definitely would prefer if we had more options. I definitely would prefer if we had more options. And big up Wes Bagley. Big up Wes Bagley. Moving on from that one. Moving on from that one. We have this courtesy of Hypebeast regarding Beam's slow, ready, minimalist bag collection. And I fucking love it. I really love these bags. They look very warm. They look very airy. They look very easy to use. They look incredibly versatile. And because I'm on a big bag fix at the moment in terms of like tote bags and backpacks to kind of, you know, mix up and the stuff that I've got and kind of give my Supreme backpack a bit of a rest, I really like the look of this, especially this backpack that's got one sling, that's got two pockets on the side, kind of like a triangle shape, is really flipping nice. There's another one too that's kind of like a sack that can go around the back and the front that looks really incredible. And they're all, I'm not sure if they're, I won't call them modular, but they're really easy to wrap around and stuff. Again, a nice kind of tote bag shape that's similar to like a head porter. It looks really cool. You've got another one too that I'm a big fan of. This particular one here, the backpack range, that's more of a triangle shape. And I've always been a big fan of like freeform bags. I don't like the backpacks that have like the hard shell or like the hard back. You know, I guess it's good for comfort, but I would prefer it to be a bit more freeform so that when you stuff things in there, it obviously takes the shape wherever you got in there, and you could usually squeeze way more in to the bag itself. You've got another color here of the triangle bag, which is a really awesome shape because it's a triangle. It's kind of, when it opens up, it almost looks like a half of a patty, like a half taco type of shape. But when you fold it, it forms this really interesting origami triangle, you know, kind of teardrop shape as well, which is going to be cool to wrap around. So then it kind of wraps around like a kite almost around your body. So that's pretty cool. And again, the backpack is great. It comes in that cream color and this dark black navy-ish color as well. I'll probably get the cream color first. It's probably definitely me by first option on that one. Another kind of tote style bag as well there. But yeah, these bags are really flipping crazy good. Very, 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 very good. And I'm a big fan of them. And I think they're going to be available soon, right? Yeah, starting in June. Oh, June. So this is Beams has tapped Japanese accessories brand Slow for a refreshing collaboration. The collaboration comprises of three roomy bag styles called the Azuma, the nylon helmet bag, and the nylon rucksack. Drawing in aesthetic and conceptual cues from the Edo era, Azuma reimagines fabric wrap bags, old times using modern materials. The main body of the Azuma boasts a nylon composition, which is handled with straps and crafted by leather. Oh, the straps are leather. Oh, I love that. That would definitely wear in a lot better than if it was nylon. That's actually that's very Japanese way of doing it. So look at that shape as well. See, it's got that nice triangle, so it kind of fits right underneath your armpit, so you can wear it like a messenger or like a sling bag across your body. And this leather bag, also this leather strap, would work a lot better than a nylon, because the strap is usually where you get a lot of the, you know, friction and shit. So that would definitely last longer than the nylon straps if it was on there. So that's a really cool little design flip. Both styles arrive in tonal fabric fabrication, ample storage, and benefits of utilitarian appeal. It can be priced at $100. Is available to shop online as well as being physical store starting 7th of June. The other two bags will also be officially released through the store. So can't wait to see them when they do officially launch. I think, is it available, said now, in the Beams website? Let's actually check it out if it's available to buy actually right now on the Beams website. I don't think it maybe is, but this could be a good chance to see how much it is. But it did say $100, right? So let me see if it was available here. Beams. There's so much stuff on Beams websites, to be completely fair. It's kind of hard to navigate through all of it. Let's see if they've got anything on their recent styles. Nothing there so far. Let's go to the lookbook. Let's go to the items. And let's see if they've got anything new there. Maybe we can quickly check it out here. Men. We've got accessories, miscellaneous items. Bags. There we go. We've got men's bags over there. Let's see if it's available. This might be a long one because, again, Japanese sites are hard to navigate. There's a lot of shit. There's a lot of SKUs on Japanese sites. They put out a lot of fucking product. They do not play when it comes to the products. I'll tell you that much. Okay, cool. Let's do bags. Let's see what we can see here. Nothing so far again. We have to go through again to items, go back to bags. Let's see what we have. Come on, bro. Give me a little bit of a hint here. Give me a little bit of a hint. I'm curious to see if it's going to be the same price as what they listed on there. Is it there? Not there. Is it that one there? No, that's not the one there. But that's a similar type of style. That triangle type of tote bag style that goes underneath your armpit is really cool. But I don't see it there just yet. Which is fine, I guess. I guess we'll find out. Okay, there it is there. It's available there. There it is. So the backpack is available. But we don't have the other one, the triangle type of bag. But the backpack is available. And it's, how much is it? It's let's say it's 26,000 yen. Let's see how much is that? What does that come up to in UK prices? 26,000 JPY to GBP. What is that? 136. Oof, that's a lot, bro. That's not fucking cheap for a nylon backpack, innit? That might be a little bit pricey for a nylon backpack, I'm not gonna lie. Might have to double think this one. Jesus Christos, for a nylon backpack. Would not, it's freeform, it's quite nice, don't get me wrong, but 136 quid. We'll see. Either way, big up Beams, always one of my favorite Japanese brands out there. Again, you know, Beams is, if you don't know anything about Beams, it's basically like an upscale version of Uniqlo, essentially. A lot of the stuff is really great. They have a lot of Japanese exclusive stuff they sell over there. Some stuff is sold by certain retail stores, but it's a flipping great place to get nice basics and shit with minimal branding on it as well. So really, really cool. So big up Beams, big up Blood Clot Beams. Moving on from this, we have to talk about the Travis Jordan Jumpman Jacks. Honestly, I've been hyping and been on these shoes from the get-go because I recognize these being a really great and amazing addition to my workout regime, because these look like the perfect workout shoes. And I'm glad that I've seen some content and some promotional stuff from Travis Scott that's been basically pushing these shoes more on the workout side of things and not on the flipping basketball side, which is really obviously great. But I'm just confused why they put it under the Jordan Jumpman thing. It could be a stone. That's the thing I've said about the lack of innovation from Nike. This could be its own subdivision. Travis Scott could have his own kind of like, you know, division, whether it's TS, whatever it's flipping called, that has nothing to do with the Jordan Jumpman. That could be another point of innovation because it's a new silhouette. But instead, they'd rather put it under the familiar brand of Jordan, capitalize on that, increase their sales and whatever it may be. But it doesn't really do anything. You know, it doesn't really tell an interesting story. I think the better story would be, hey, we're giving Travis another signature shoe. It's going to be under his own kind of division, his own umbrella, his own brand under Nike. And it has nothing to do with the Jordan Jumpman. That might be a better thing. And then you do separate collaborations with him directly through Jordan or whatever else. But, you know, Nike and Jordan do what they want to do. The actual shoe itself is fucking beautiful. Like I said, it reminds me a lot of like the classic Nike Air Trainer 1 from back in the day that I always have been a fan of, because that's my introduction to kind of like cross training in general. It's this shoe here, the classic Air Trainer 1. What is it? I think it's, how do you call the color? I think it's chlorophyll, right? I think it's chlorophyll? There we go. Chlorophyll, the original Andre Agassi shoe from back in the day. So that Jordan, so that Travis Scott Jumpman shoe that I'm talking about, the Jumpman Jack, sorry. I swear to God, it kind of reminds me of these. It really flipping does. Let me get them all over here so you can see Wagwan and you can see what I'm saying. But I swear, they kind of remind me of these really, really a lot. The Air Trainer 1. It gives me a lot of that chlorophyll 80s cross trainer type of vibe, you know? Really flipping cool shoe. It comes in this colorway, which is a more of a white with black with a red swoosh that's backwards, which looks really cool in this off-white kind of midsole type area. And then on the other colorway, it's a brown, which is really nice. It's white with brown bits and it's got this amazing gum sole. So I'm not gonna lie, I will try and get both. I know it's very unlikely that I'll get either, but I would definitely try to get both because these are both hard and I'm not really too sure which shoe I'd wear in the gym, because I'd have to pick one. Would be a lifestyle, you know, go to the club shoe and hang out and do your thing, cycle, whatever. And the other one would have to be like the shoe that I wear to the gym, but I don't know which one it is. I love the flip too, by the way. On the instep, there's swoosh the right way around, and on the outstep, the shoe's the other way around. That's really flipping cool. The one with the gum sole might be the one that you wear to go out. I swear down. And then obviously the one with the black might be the ones that you wear to the gym, because these are really fucking nice, man. I love this. Got like the, what do you call it, invisible seam on the front of this toe box too. You got this big strap. You got this nice tongue mesh. I think, is that mesh or corduroy? I think that's mesh. That's actually mesh. They look really fucking cool. Really, really good. To be honest, they don't look the greatest looking down. I'm not going to lie. When you look down on them, they don't look the greatest. But from the side, they look really nice. Looking down, they look a little bit... Looking down, they don't look that great looking down. Looking down, they kind of look like Jordan 1s. And I fucking hate Jordan 1 lows. Especially Jordan 1 lows. They look like Jordan 1 lows looking down. They kind of have a weird Jordan 1 low kind of feel about them. But everything else about them is absolutely splendid. On the heel cups, you've got obviously the... On the heels, sorry. You've got the flipping Travis Scott logo there as well. The scarecrow type figure. You've got Jack written on the bottom. The only thing that's weird about them for the gym, they don't have the greatest grip, do they? The grip pattern isn't the greatest. They look like they almost at the bottom. It almost reminds me of a bottom of a wallaby. Bottom of Clark's wallaby. It's almost got a Clark's wallaby feel. And if you know anything about Clark's wallabies, they're horrible in the rain. You wear Clark's in the rain and you are dancing like fucking Michael Jackson. Right, they're not the greatest shoe to wear in the rain. It's like a crepe sole, basically. So those flipping Travis Scott Jumpmans kind of look a little bit like, you know, they look a little bit like wallabies at the bottom. Or am I bugging? They look a little bit like wallabies. The gum sole obviously would work well in the gym because it's a gum sole. Maybe the gum sole might be the gym shoe then, because the other one is like, it's looking too much like a wallaby. Like that's, you're gonna slip all over the place with that off-white color. It's not really maybe the greatest option, I'm not going to lie. So maybe that cream one might have to be the one that you wear. This one might have, the one with the off-white sort of outsole might be the one that you wear to lifestyle. And then the one with the gum sole you wear obviously to gym, because I'm assuming the gum sole will be a little bit more sticky, a little bit more rubbery, so you can work out well in them. Even though I think the other one does have an outsole. It's not just connected to the midsole, is it? It does look like it's connected, but I don't think it is. Yeah, it's a separate outsole. So it's a separate outsole there. Not the same as that polyurethane midsole, but it just looks weird. It looks very slippery. That's the only problem with it. But they are beautiful up close. Very, the quality is amazing on these. I think that's like tumbled leather, like a big thick strap. Look how thick the fucking swoosh is. Like they invested a lot of money in these shoes. The R&D on these shoes must have been a lot. That's a very high quality Nike shoe. There's some, you know, tear there, but I think overall the thickness of the paneling, the materials, the laces, they really went crazy on these. They went absolutely ham. I'm not gonna lie, I love them. I just don't understand why it's under the Jordan brand logo. I guess because Travis has got a Jumpman thing, but this could have easily been its own thing to kind of, you know, give it a bit of a spruce. But you know, Nike are gonna do what Nike are gonna do. And let's check out some of the boxes as well. You see the box design. It comes with a nice dust bag, which doubles up as a tote, which is great because everybody keeps their dust bags usually as shopping bags. But this tote bag is pretty cool. And that's probably it. So let's see what the details are. I think they're coming at the end of the month, aren't they? Yeah. Check out the full set of official images. Expect a wider release to go down on April 30th. Peep the prior updates below. So April 30th, they're about to drop. Yeah, You see the gum sole, the gum sole look way more better to lifestyle. This guy wearing them is wearing them horribly. He's got fucking elasticated like cargo pants on. Like, what the fuck are you doing with a zip on it? So he's not really freaking them well, but they do look really nice. That gum sole is fucking popping. And let me see this one that's University Red. So the University Red colorway, and what's the other one called? Officially, it's called Sail. So Sales, a gum one, and University Red's an off-white one. Again, horrible fucking pictures. These guys that put their toes up and shit. Super sus. Horrible. Hate them, to be fair. Sneaker photography in general is fucking garbage. You'd never ever buy a sneaker because somebody took a good picture of them on. It's always just a shoe by itself. I've noticed that. Whenever I buy a shoe, it's because I saw a product image of it, not because I saw someone wearing it looking cool. Or taking a good picture. Sneaker photography is fucking notoriously really shit. So yeah, looking forward to them. Gonna try my luck to get both pairs. Will be unlikely to get probably either, knowing my luck with fucking sneakers. but we will try. We will be there. We will be there. Moving on from that one, we also have this courtesy of Hypebeast regarding Lil Yachty, who debuted these really cool Nike Air Force One that he's making in collaboration with his label called Concrete. It's really fucking cool. He's already put out a first pair that was all white, but now he's done these pairs that look similar to like a Bapeser colorway in like this patent, what do you call it, green with like orange, yellowy type color with a bit of red on it as well. Really cool. I'm not too sure if this is like a flip on the Ghana flag. I'm not too sure if that's the reason why. Maybe there's Lil Yachty have like Ghanaian ancestry, Ghanaian heritage. I'm not really too sure. Is it a Ghana thing? Is it something else? I'm not really too sure, but it could be a Ghana thing. I'm not too sure if it is a Ghana thing, but it could be that shoe is like Concrete Boys Ghana celebration time or Ghana Independence Day things. I'm not really too precisely sure, but the colorways do match up slightly, don't they? If you see the colorway of that Lil Yachty shoe and the Ghana flag, it does look kind of similar, right? With the red, maybe it's the other way. It's the wrong way around probably, isn't it? For it to be Ghana, it's a wrong order. It should be like red, yellow, green. And this is like red. This is like red, yeah, that way. I don't know. Maybe it's a Ghana thing. Either way, they fucking look amazing. Again, harken back to the good old days of Co.JP Air Force Ones. Really cool patent design. Clearly, you know what I'm going with the Air Force One. Looks amazing. Great silhouette. And I also like the addition of this silver line. We don't really see this too often. Outside the swoosh, there's like a silver line border going along. And the embroidered logo of the Concrete sign for the Concrete Boys is cool. It's embroidered and it's incredibly thick. Like really 3D raised, you know, relief type looking embroidery on the heel, which I prefer more to like, you know, screen printing or whatever, or embossing. This is going to last longer. So the quality is really high level on these, to be fair, considering Nike usually, you know, shit the bed when it comes to retros of Air Force Ones. And then there's also other colorways here, courtesy of my guys over and under, new Concrete Boys Nike Air Force One colorways. We've also got obviously the colorway that Yachty wore during Coachella weekend one. Oh, it's got like a satin lining. These are going to be expensive. The lining is like satin or silk. These are going to be really expensive. Jesus, lovely. I love those. And then, of course, there's other colorways. There's an all-black colorway. This reminds me a lot of the... There's an Air Force One mid like this, actually. I think Yachty is the one. He's going into the archives. There's an Air Force One mid of this same colorway that I remember having in school with the outsole in red, lining in red with the all-black upper. I think I got in trouble wearing them in school as well because you're meant to wear all black shoes, but, you know, had a bit of pop there. There's also the same shoe with all black, with the leather, with purple. Those are really nice too. The leather on these is really cool, good looking, to be fair, as well. This is really high quality, so I'm assuming these will be quite expensive. And there's also a classic white colorway with the orange outside and orange lining also there. So really cool designs, really cool colorways. Yachty fucking smashed it. I can't wait for these to drop. No idea when they are going to drop, to be honest. Everyone's just sharing these pictures all the time. And obviously these really cool promo images too that Yachty did, where he's basically emulating this old and vintage picture of Nigo back in the day, gazing at his Marvel Bapesters that released back in the day. These Marvel Bapesters, I remember queuing for when they originally released at Busy Workshop in London back in the day. They actually came in, right? The Bapesters originally came in a box that was similar to how you would buy like a figurine from Marvel. Absolutely incredible. Like some of the best package that... What Nigo was doing at Bape back in the day needs to be studied. It needs to be put into a really dense documentary because he was spazzing. Like he made these shoes... collaboration with Marvel, and he had them wrapped. Obviously this is the updated version, but the original versions were obviously wrapped like they are like a toy that you'd buy in this amazing plastic casing, and some people would literally keep the shoes in there and not fucking open them. I've still got friends that have these legitimate new ones that they haven't opened ever before. You'd have one with Spider-Man, you'd have one with the Fantastic Four, you'd have one with Hulk, all different types of Marvel characters on there, Iron Man, Captain America. Like four fucking great, really, really cool. So obviously what's his name, Lil Yachty, is from good stock, so he's out here fucking emulating his hero because Nigo was the master and the king of flipping Air Force Ones, or that Bape style of Air Force One anyway. And it's amazing when you look at the picture, because this picture that I've got here on the screen, that shows, you know, Nego looking at the early sample of the shoe that he did, the Peyton shoe, the Bapesters, which is not a Marvel, actually, just a basic Bapester. But, or I think it's a, maybe a collaboration, I'm not sure that logo's at the back. But the funny thing about it is that even though Nike gave him a cease and desist, isn't it funny that the shape of the Bapester is actually nicer than the Air Force One? Like, look how flat and straight this toe box is compared to the little bend that happens here on this updated retro of the Nike Air Force One. The overall shape and silhouette, and I heard allegedly, I'd never actually bought the legit Bapesters from when these were released back in the day. Oh, by the way, look at it. Look at that ring. Honestly, Nego was drippy, innit? Swarovski Bape hoodie. This hoodie was so in demand when I was buying Bape back in the day and back in the scene. The Bape logo with the diamond and crosses all over it, the ring. But anyway, this particular shoe, I remember people saying that it was considerably more lighter than the regular Air Force One. So Nego did what great Japanese designers do. He took an already existing product, deconstructed it, and rebuilt it to his taste with minor improvements. And allegedly, I remember, one of the things they did to get around the first lawsuit from Nike was that he had, things like over 120 different points of alteration. So they went through the Air Force One and altered and twisted and kind of changed dimensions, little tweaks here and there, so that even though it looks similar to an Air Force One, technically it wasn't, because there was loads of different, you know, changes in terms of the design. Eventually, I think Nike won or put more pressure on him or something. I don't know how it kind of basically ended, but the original shape of the Bapester Air Force One is so much better than the actual Air Force One. It's incredible, to be fair. And like I said, I heard they were really light as well. So amazing stuff to see. Can't wait to see Lil Yachty release those very, very soon. Hopefully he releases those very soon. Next on the list here, we have to talk about, we have to end and talk about the horrible and the, you know, ridiculous and almost diabolical loss, or it feels like a loss, actual win against Coventry, in the semi-finals FA Cup, Man United, where we drew the game 3-3 and ended up winning on penalties and going through to face Man City in the final. Terrible match, to be fair. It's just shocking because we were basically up 3-0. We scored two goals in the first half. The game was dead and gone. By the time Bruno Fernandes scored in the second half with a deflected shot, it almost felt like the game was over. That was it. They were there for the taking. Erik ten Hag rightfully took off a few of our better players to kind of give them a bit of a rest. And it felt like we were on our way to flipping Wembley with little to no worries. Then all of a sudden, we completely capitulate and this team just bottles it. And we invite all the pressure on. Coventry rightfully get back another goal or one goal to kind of make it shaky with Sims, great finish. Callum O'Hare, who was one of their better players, was lucky to have a good deflection, but he also deserved that goal. And then right at the end, Aaron Wan-Bissaka decided to do what Aaron Wan-Bissaka did, splay his hands out, the ball touched his hand, penalty, Haji Wright slotted it in. The thing about this performance that's really distressing is that we were up 3-0 against a team in the Championship who are currently 8th. And we showed that we were a clout above the first half and the majority and, you know, some bit of the second half. So basically 60 minutes, we were on top. But I think this match is a great example of just how many shit cunts play for United. Because you can't blame this at Erik ten Hag. As much as I hate Erik ten Hag, as much as I think he's a managerial catfish and he really did sell us a dream with how he was going to play and whatever else, and we all wanted him and it's turned into a bit of a disaster. And obviously he's got mitigating, you know, situations around injuries or whatever it may be, but put that to one side and my hate for him, you cannot blame this on the manager. These professional football players getting paid what they paid should have been able to manage this game 3-0 up. They should have been able to kind of kill the game. Even when Coventry got a goal back, they should have been able to take the sting out of the game without waiting for instruction or direction from the manager. And the fact that they couldn't, and they let Coventry nearly win, because they could have won in normal time if I think Haji was onside by a couple of minutes. No, Haji, somebody else, I forgot what player it was. I think it was maybe the Scandinavian player that came, that was playing for them. Maybe it was Sheaf. It might have been Sheaf. I'm sure it might have been Sheaf, but whoever it was, they were really close to actually being able to win in normal time. But obviously, the move got called offside and they obviously had to go to penalties. And unluckily for Sheffield, or Coventry, sorry, two of their best players in O'Hare. No, actually, O'Hare and maybe Eccles or somebody. I forgot who it was. I think it was a captain. Two of their better players unfortunately ended up missing the penalties. So, which is, you know, considerably unfair when you consider how well they played. So this game, again, like I said, a great example of just how bad we are as a club. And for me, another reminder why this summer coming up, forget incomings, forget the Sescos, forget the Benzema's rumors, forget people wanting to go after De Jong, forget any glitzy Galactico player that you want. If you're a United fan, the only thing that you want this summer is for there to be mass clear out of that squad. We should be spending more money on terminating contracts than we should be spending on actually signing players. And I'm willing to go into the next season playing mostly youth, playing mostly fringe players, just to get rid of these shit cunts, because a lot of them aren't worth the badge that they have on their shirt. They're not upholding the traditions of United. They're taking the piss out of the club. They take the piss out of the managers. They take the piss out of the fucking, you know, out of the fans, most importantly. And they always seem to survive. And I think this is the time where enough is enough. Even though the coach is still going to go at the end of the season, I think Erik ten Hag definitely does deserve to get fired. He hasn't earned the last, you know, year of his contract. But before he goes, I'd much rather see a lot of these guys go. That's where I am now. Even though I hate Erik ten Hag, I'd much rather him stay for another year than have these shit cunts playing for us for another year. I don't want any of them there. The Iron Wan-Bissakas, even Onanas, the Harry Maguires, the McTominays, the Bruno Fernandes, Rashford, it was fucking awful. All those guys can go, and I'm willing to bank on our long-term future on the likes of Hoyland, Garnacho, Maino, you know, and maybe a few others. That's it. The rest of them can be put on the chopping block tomorrow. I swear to God they can. I swear to God they can. And then to make matters worse, this article came out courtesy of Chris Wheeler of the Daily Mirror. Allegedly, earlier this season, Erik ten Hag and his coaching staff were presented with a tricky issue within the squad when Rasmus Højlund complained that Bruno Fernandes, the captain by the way, wasn't passing to him enough. Højlund fell out with Diego Dalot during a 4-3 Champions League defeat to Copenhagen in November. Fernandes sided with Dalot. So Højlund, the young striker that we signed for 70 plus million, who was getting no service, and a lot of fans online, myself included, United fans on Twitter, were complaining, why aren't our fucking players passing to him? Why is it always he's in great positions and they opt to shoot, or they opt to pass it to somebody else? Why aren't they feeding him the ball? He's clearly making great runs. He's getting tired making all these runs and not receiving the ball. And he's not scoring, and he's putting pressure on him. And some people, some fans online, were kind of pontificating and theorizing that maybe the players don't like him for some reason. And I was like, no way. He's a young player. He's just coming to the side. Like, why wouldn't they like him? And why, if you don't like somebody, there's plenty of teams and players back in the day who didn't like somebody and you just got on with it as a professional. You didn't play with everybody that you fucking liked. This is such an infantile, you know, nonsense way to kind of approach professional sports. You just get on with the fucking job. Now this story comes out, so everybody was right. And the most concerning thing for me about this, apart from our captain not being willing to pass the ball to our star striker, apart from that, by the way, especially the captain that a lot of fans feel like he can do no wrong, fuck fucking Bruno Fernandes. The main thing that's really concerning about this, the coaching staff didn't recognize this. The coaching staff didn't see an issue with our main striker not getting the ball. They didn't notice this beforehand. It's us fans that did. So it goes to show that even though some of us fans online, myself included, can be very knee-jerk, can be very hyperbolic, can be very emotional, can be very reactive, we do watch our club closely. We probably watch our club closely and with more passion and more intensity than regular people, because we support this fucking team. And by the looks of it, the people that are employed by the club, who are paid handsomely to, you know, to provide us with great games, entertaining football, and maybe win trophies, they aren't even paying that close attention, because these motherfuckers, Erik ten Hag and his coaching staff, did not see that there was an issue with the lack of service that Højlund was getting. So much so, the players had to handle the situation themselves. And I understand what happened, because more than likely, if Højlund brought up the issue to the managers and said, hey, I'm not getting the ball passed to me enough, the other players would probably look at him like he's a snitch. Like, what the fuck are you snitching for? Which will immediately ostracize him and alienate him from the squad, because now the other players feel like they can't trust him because he's going to go straight to the manager and be the quote-unquote teacher's pet. So the managers, because they are not paying attention, have basically created an environment where some players don't pass to each other because they don't get along. absolutely insane, unprofessional, and just another example of just a joke of a club that we're at. And all of this falls on the feet of the Glazers. The lack of professionalism, the lack of care, the lack of flipping consequences for bad performances and bad results and shit, whatever, has led to these players having overinflated sense of ego. United are fucking shit. We're going to finish highest position in the league. It's probably six anyway. We'll probably end up trophyless. We're diabolical. We're going nowhere fast. But these players act like they're playing for Real Madrid. They have the ego of Real Madrid players, but they have nothing else to show for it, which is crazy because Real Madrid players, by the looks of it, listen to their coaches. They are very professional about what they do. But us United players who haven't done nothing in the game, most of them, with the exception of maybe some new signings in Casemiro and Varane, most of them haven't done nothing in the game and they're ponting around and flexing their muscle like they're big dogs. I fucking hate a lot of them. So the sooner they all go, the better. The sooner they all go, the fucking better. But again, what do I know? Anyways, that has been it for the Alex Nozinga Show, episode number 769. If you've enjoyed the show, you like what you see what you like, please make sure you smash the like button down below. I beg of you, that would be greatly appreciated. Please make sure you smash the like button down below if you've enjoyed what you've seen. Of course, if you want to check out the audio side of the podcast, all you need to do is head over to theagostinozingashow.com and you'll find the selection of shows that I do and everything in between available on my lovely flipping Libsyn available there. So you can check that out if you are that way inclined. It's a really amazing place to check out all my show. I'm going to have it here available here on the screen for you to check out. There's also a nice contact button there as well if you so wish to flip and reach out to the kid and say wagwan. So there it is, the Alex Nozinga Show main fucking website, theagostinozingashow.com, all one word. You can find the audio version of the show with links to some of the topics I talk about available there for you to check out. So thank you for checking out the Alex Nozinga Show episode number 769. If you listen via the audio side of the podcast, you'll hear my tune of the day playing for you now, and obviously the video side of thing, you will hear it too. My tune of the day is Babyface E, County Time. That is my tune of the day today, is Babyface E, County Time. Thank you for tuning in to the Alex Nozinga Show. I appreciate you, and I'll see you all again very, very soon.
Hey, I ain't even tell you, I went to jail the other day on some bullshit, though. Like, it's really my fault, because I really could have just took off on their ass. But I'm like, nah, I ain't gonna do that, you feel me? I ain't gonna take off on their ass. They just gotta be on my ass tomorrow. Jay just got out of jail and shit. I'm an illegal dude, so I'm like, fuck, I ain't gonna search for this anyway. So I'm on my way to the O. No matter of fact, was going to J Crew cause we was finna smoke. And y'all know I keep a pole on me everywhere I go. The MOS 43X, man, that bitch was cold. So we thought we was finna smoke, but I ain't had nothing to roll. I told him I ain't had no woods, let's pull up to the stove. I'm in that wide body, bitch, I ain't driving slow. Swear to God, if they ain't see my plate, it would've been adios. So I'm walking to the dough, the boy's driving slow. I'm hesitating cause I'm already know I'm not supposed to have my pole. Playing state boys, you already know what they ask me on. But they ain't pull up in the store, so I'm okay for sure. Got in the whip, asked Jay where they go. He said, I don't know, police scanner beeping like a bitch, so they still close. I don't know where they ass was hiding, and I still don't. Pull out the store, and it was right behind me. And that Glock 43, it was right beside me. Bent the corner, should've tossed it out, but I had perfect timing. They ain't hit they lights yet, they was just behind me. And J Crib was down the street, so I just kept on driving. They hit they lights, Glock was in my drawers, y'all gonna think I'm lying. Came to my window for credentials, I couldn't even find. Said, where you to? I said, the stew, then he started eyeing. He said, oh, you Babyface E. Oh, you be on Say Cheese. Yeah. You the one that stay P. Yeah. You the one that take keys. Yeah. You the one that ride around choppers that be 8 feet. You the one that turn up the block and take the whole street. These girls had a bottle in my car and I ain't peep. It was in the past, they seen that shit right by JP. They can search the car after that. It's a PC. Proper cause, nigga, if you ain't know what the fuck that mean. At this point, I'm annoyed in the bitch. I admit, I got sweats on trying to hide the blick. But I'm still in my head like they ain't finding shit. Cause it's not the first time that I had to hide my stick. But them pussy niggas found that shit. Tell Jay, take the whip. I'ma do this a little time and shit. Might make me do a 48 or some kind of shit. Only had to do a fucking day cause I bonded, bitch. Yeah. You know, God, nigga, know what's up. I had to spend 10 to get out that bitch.
Better act about it.
And they let me out 3 hours later before you talking about. And I seen the judge at 6 o'clock. He said, nobody ever see the judge at 6 o'clock. You know some people.